Colorado Springs number one car show by default. This is Automotive ADHD.
And this is Automotive ADHD. As a bonus, you are listening to a bonus episode, podcast only. If you're listening on the podcast, you should feel special. You're getting something extra that the folks on the radio aren't getting. I almost feel like I'm kind of cutting them short. You know, I almost feel bad for my radio listeners, but then I remember they can always, you know, come to the podcast here, obviously. So, but hey, thanks for joining us on this Automotive ADHD bonus. I have across the toolbox from me just after the show, Brian. We were talking on the show about EVs, about the electric systems and stuff with the Volvos and things like that. But now this is a little more free flowing and we could talk about something entirely different that I know you have been wanting to talk about for a while, which is the world of standalone ECUs. You are quite skilled, in my opinion, when it comes. I know you're shaking your head there, but in my opinion, you've got quite a knowledge base when it comes to ECUs and tuning them. Definitely more than even the average technician. Most guys, I think, don't know even some of what you're doing. So, okay, with standalone ECUs, I've had this gripe with a lot of people who say, oh, I want XYZ ECU, and it's very expensive. And even though they don't need it, maybe they're just running a four-cylinder and they're buying a $3,000 ECU. What's your opinion on that? How much ECU do you need when you're talking about standalones?
I think the biggest problem in the industry for a while has been the fact that there's just this huge gap between people that do proper motorsports that has excess money to spend and isn't really concerned about cost. And then you have the person at home who wants to do something hobbyist based, something swappable. And they are either unfortunately stuck in a position where they have to haggle an OEM setup to work in a rough state of what they wanted to do poorly, or they have to go to what is a standalone and spend a ridiculous amount of money for something that will only be used about 10% of its actual capacity.
Mm-hmm. Now explain the term standalone versus piggyback.
So the difference is that with a piggyback, the stock ECM is kept and the piggyback essentially will just modify the pulse width from the outputs of the ECU and the spark. Basically sits in the middle. It's like a man in the middle attack, if you want to call it, where the stock ECU is commanding a certain pulse width. The piggyback picks it up and goes, oh, we're going to modify it by this much and then actually outputs it to the direct injectors or spark ignition directly.
Okay. And so when you're talking standalone versus piggyback, I think piggybacks are falling out of favor with some builds, but I feel like for a while they've kind of gone out of favor, right? Piggybacks were often seen in the 90s and the early 2000s, but now with modern ECUs being really locked down in some cases, we're kind of seeing them come back. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I think it's what you're seeing is the fact that combustion engines, the technology to run them as far as computers go, it requires hardly any computation power. So we've had this ability to do them for so long that computers haven't really had to go any farther to do the same task. The only thing that we've seen is that the cost for the technology has just gotten profoundly cheaper. And the thing that I like now is that we've had with the new age of technology where people are able to open source, build things just like a manufacturer would have been able to do, like build your own PCBs and put your own semiconductor devices on it and whatnot, and then also program it your own way at a very cheap cost. People are now able to start projects such as the Speedduino GitHub page, where we're building firmware that allows something as small and like cheap as an Arduino Mega to control a whole entire engine, which is incredible because we're talking about a $25 unit running basically anything from a four-cylinder to an eight-cylinder. And it only gets better because these projects are grown upon in the community. They can't die because they're not owned by a conglomerate. They're not proprietary. So people can take it and, you know, just change it in their own fashion. I mean, that's what we're seeing right now. And unfortunately, I'm of the opinion that for a lot of people that are just getting into the hobby, it's like this constant problem where someone goes, I want to work on cars. I want to make a race car. And the first thing they do is they either cosmetically change a car in a really dumb fashion, mm-hmm. or they go straight after taking apart the motor in an effort to increase the horsepower out of a stock motor and put it back into a stock car, which is kind of bad.
Well, I see so many people who say, oh, built motor. Built motor. Oh, well, yeah, we're going to do this and we're going to build the motor. Okay, yeah. Well, why are you building the motor? Have you broken the motor yet? Have you exceeded the mechanical limits of the motor yet? Have you done all of these things? Maybe if you blew it up, was it not because the motor was at its mechanical limits, but because something else was wrong?
That's always been the case. Typically, when someone approaches me and they want to start a project, they want me to do all this stuff, I pull back their expectations a lot. And I go, first of all, what are you really trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And they'll, of course, they'll always be like, I just want a race car. I want to go fast.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, explain what you mean by fast. What are you expecting your car to do? What they always end up doing is they set their expectations so high that they're going to build this crazy motor, they're going to put the biggest turbo they can find on it, the biggest tires they can, and then strip out the interior. And once they've done all this, they realize they've built a terrible, terrible car that they hate to drive, or it just consumes all of their money. And what really comes down to is someone just wants to tinker. Mm-hmm. Someone wants the car to be a little faster and peppier, something more enjoyable to drive, and they still want to drive as a street car. I can't count how many times someone's like, yeah, we're just going to strip out the heater box and we're going to do this and that. I'm like, okay, so what happens when it gets cold side? Are you going to...
Yeah, everyone goes, oh, yeah, it's a track car. Yeah, it's stripped out interior.
And then they never drive it on
and
the track.
And then they never drive it on the track. Or they might drive it on the track a little bit, but really they drive it on the street more still. And to your point, even the heater. Right, I get it with AC. AC is the first thing
to
go.
Or taking the window regulators out.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I can. We have a mutual friend who I'm thinking of.
And that was miserable.
That was terrible. There was a screwdriver holding the freaking window up.
So coming back to computers, at least, and standalone ECUs, the biggest problem I've seen is that when someone goes and starts building a motor, even if they know kind of what they want to do, the obvious problem comes up. Mm-hmm. Oh, the engine was naturally aspirated, and now I want to put a turbo on it, and how am I going to get it to work? And, oh, I have an automatic transmission. How's it going to survive? I do want to do a manual swap, and now the computer won't let it rev past 4,000 because the car thinks it's essentially in park.
Yeah.
All these little tidbits and problems with a factory setup start to become obvious, and then you realize that to modify the stock ECM to handle different like boost or power strategies, such as having boost or a different cam and different fuels, all of a sudden the cost to have someone like custom tune that stock computer, because unfortunately that changes for every car. ECMs are not all the same. It's apples to oranges with every single vehicle. So then you find people that have specifically broken that computer in such a way that they've been able to physically change the tables in the flash, but they'd of course do it their own way. They've locked it down, their software to be proprietary. You have to buy a license key. You can only modify it so many times for it to buy another license key. You have to buy their dongle and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then this is where the standalone comes into play. Well, I'll just buy a standalone and do it this way. And of course, because the market for standalones has always been so slim picking, you're stuck with all these brands that are incredibly expensive. And then the only one for the most longest time that has been affordable was the Megasquirt.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the Megasquirt actually was, as most people will disagree with me, it was actually a decent product. The problem is that anyone picking one up was only picking up because of the price tag, and none of them actually understood how to operate or wire one up correctly.
Yeah, and I think so many people I've heard whenever you say, oh, I've got a Megasquirt ECU, people kind of turn their nose up at that.
Yeah, they look at you like you're stupid.
Yeah, like, oh, why wouldn't you get a Haltech? Obviously, or Motec, you know, don't get me started on Motec.
The thing is that no matter what you guys are out there running, the truth comes to the fact that your build is only as good as your weakest link.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think
That was the music coming in from the radio.
This is the best part.
The radio show. Don't worry about that. We're on the podcast.
It doesn't matter if you have a Haltech, a Motec. Realistically, if you're coming down the weakest link, if your motor isn't built good, if you have the wrong size turbo, if you have a huge restriction in exhaust, if you have ignition issues where it's breaking up in boost and it can't produce the spark you need, or if your injectors are too small, that is your weakest link. It doesn't matter if you buy the most expensive unit on the planet. You're not going to overcome those issues. You'll never be able to tune more power out of it.
And I think it's because people, one of the things that happens is people don't really know, for one, what they're doing. For two, they throw money
at the problem.
At the problem that they don't fundamentally understand.
And they're already on a tight budget.
Yeah, absolutely. And
then they get frustrated and they give up. And then it ends up on the marketplace.
Facebook Marketplace. Find some great deals on there. Craigslist too. Now, what are some, we talked about how, you know, people get wrapped up a lot of times in expensive ECUs.
Like, it's full sequential, bro.
It's like, okay. And it's like, oh, full sequential 12 cylinder. It's like, yeah, you got it on a 4G63. That's a four cylinder.
Yep. Yep. And this is a common issue. And then the problem too is like, well, that's great. It can do all that. Are you going to use any of it? And also, who's tuning it? And then there's the next step is like, oh, tuner blew it up, or, oh, you know, you got to take it to the dyno. And then like, there's just more and more of just a cascading effect of problems, because everyone wants to get their stuff on a dyno and get it quote unquote tuned. And the truth is like, you should have been street tuning your car from the get go. Mm-hmm. If your car can't even drive reasonably on the street, you're going to waste all your money trying to get it to run properly on the dyno just to even get a pull sent. And then the problem is, oh, okay, well, it can make power, but it can't start in the cold. Oh, it can't start hot. Oh, you have to hold the throttle. Oh, it breaks up when you do it here at this certain RPM. And, oh, I have trigger issues. So what's the point?
Right. And so in a way, your tune, your ECU and all of that is also only as good as the tuner who's doing it and their understanding
and,
of it.
And that's where like the tuner's job, like a proper tuner, their job becomes so much more than just dealing with a computer. You have to look at the person's build and be like, okay, is it built properly? Like, is it going to do what it needs to do? Like, hey, man, did you set the right spark plug gap? Do you have the correct temperature spark plugs? Like, are they cold enough for this kind of heat? And, you know, are your injectors big enough? What's your output expecting? And, oh my God, please, I swear to God, I hope you torque these wheels down correctly.
Yeah. Well, and, like, and there's so many people who I think, you know, get the wrong idea too when a tuner is telling them, hey, before I touch your car, even put it on the dyno, you need this, 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 and this.
Oh, yes.
Right? You get so many people, they'll complain. I've heard people complain like, oh man, the tuner, he sucks. He said I needed this and this, and he's just trying to get more money out of me. And it's like, in a weird way, no, actually, because he's, for one, trying to ensure his safety and also the safety of the very expensive dyno that he has in his shop.
The car, don't want that blowing the up owner, on there. And his the reputation. People on the road. And yeah, the reputation.
That happens a lot, too, where, oh, the tuner blew up the car. And it's like, okay, did the tuner really blow up the car, or was it because you forgot to put coolant in it before you sent it on the dyno?
I've had a lot of people, clients, where I start with them, and we butt heads hard because they just don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, one of them recently, I remember when I first dealt with him, and I tried to help him with a distributor after the fact, and he complained, I quickly dropped him.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of begging for me to come back, and it took a long time for him to realize that he just needs to listen.
Yeah.
And I'm. It should be a two-way street. I mean, obviously, you need to hear and understand what they want, but they also don't always understand what's reasonable and what's appropriate. Like, I have one guy that won't stop asking for any rolling any lag, and I'm like, you don't need it. Or more realistically, maybe we should try nitrous so you don't blow turbos up. He's like, ah, but turbos are cheap, and it's like, no, you're gonna go through a turbo so fast, you're not gonna be able to realistically use it. And you're just going to make, I already know what you're going to do. You're going to go home. You're going to press the button because you want to make noises, you know, blow a turbo up. And then I'm going to hear about it later. Like, ah, it keeps blowing up the turbos. Can we just take it off? And I've done this before. They always like, well, what? Why can't we do it? It's like, because I've already done this with someone else.
Yeah.
I already know what's going to happen. I already know what you're going to say. I've already gone through a guy with three turbos trying to do anti-lag.
Yeah. And well, people also don't realize things like anti-lag, that's for actual competition race use a lot of the times. I mean, how often do you actually need the rolling anti-lag on the street? Let's be real.
Yes.
Rolling anti-lag and things like that. I mean, yeah, guys wanting to do 40 pulls and stuff. Like, okay.
The truth is like they don't see that performance isn't always better. Mm-hmm. And it's not performance you're always looking for.
Yeah.
I just had someone just do a twin clutch on their car because they smoked the first one. They didn't put the flywheel bolts in properly. They weren't torqued to spec. They backed out and it failed under a pull. and they ended up having to need to do a clutch. And they decide, well, if we're going to keep pushing it, we're going to have to do a bigger, stronger clutch because trying to opt for a bigger pressure plate just ain't going to cut it. So we went straight to the twin disc. And the twin disc worked great, but you know what he complains about the most? I hate how noisy it is. It rattles like crazy. And it's like, that's your trade-off.
Or crazy heavy pedal feel too, you know, things like that. Oh, it's my clutch is a light switch.
Well, that's why we went from the heavier pressure plate to a twin disc because we wanted to avoid the heavier pedal. But also now you have to deal with a rattle. And unfortunately, that's just the trade of the game. You can't have, you know, quiet, quality, luxury, performance, and I don't know, lightweight all in the same name. Like it just doesn't work that way. Or reliability, I should say. And that's where I kept saying with the any rolling lag, it's like, sure, you'll be able to do rolls faster, but you're going to go through turbo so fast, it ain't going to matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think it's when you have guys modifying cars.
Especially when they don't do it right. Like the one I'm dealing with doesn't have water lines ran for his turbo. Like, dude, you're going to overheat the cartridge so fast, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah. Well, and the thing too, I mean, people want, they say, I want race car, but I'm going to drive it on the street. Okay, it's too loud, it's too noisy, it's too this, it's too that. I think the problem is, and as someone who wants a race car, I like race cars are cool. I think the problem is people let the, you know, what do they say? The cart get in front of the horse, right? With this, they want a race car before they're ready to go racing. Maybe you do want a track car.
They build a car way more than they can handle.
Yeah, and not realizing that.
They don't even grow with their car. They just go straight for the biggest thing.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think not realizing too that, you know, seat time and all these other things are so important. And if you can just be driving a car and enjoy it and have fun with it, maybe that's better than it being on jack stands all the time in your garage.
And I think so many times that's happened. Like my Subaru product, for example, it's not fast, but I just chose to finish it.
Yeah.
I chose to finish it in a way that would make it streetable.
Yeah.
And it's been great. And now Chance is driving it, and he enjoys it. Now he wants one, and I'm like,
oh, you convinced me to buy a Subaru.
Yeah, see, it's a problem. When you actually have a car that does what it's supposed to do, not overbuilt, and it's just streetable, you quickly realize what you really want.
You loaned me your car during a snowstorm, not because I don't have a four-wheel drive or anything, but, you know, for the lols, and it was the most fun. I literally, that weekend, you loaned it to me on a Saturday. I went out on a Facebook Marketplace, and Sunday I bought one.
Yep, and now you need an EZ30 swap.
And now I need an EZ30 swap. So, you know, I mean, granted, you know, to the listener who's, you know, who maybe has the crazy build and stuff, some people are able to pull that off because they also have maybe an end goal in sight, building a car around an end goal that also, rather, find the application and then build it for the application as you're doing it instead of overbuilding.
You really need to think about what you're wanting. Do you just want it to be a little bit faster? Do you want it to be just turbocharged? Or do you want it to beat someone? Are you trying to outrace somebody? And when it comes to that, then that's great because then you know what you want. If you're just building a race car because, I don't know, I want a race car and you don't even think about what you're going to do with it, then it just quickly becomes a money pit. Mm-hmm. And I've done that firsthand too many times myself. And it took so long to realize that, like, I'm just doing this wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's why one of my cars still doesn't run.
You want to help me with that Honda that's behind you there?
or my 240. and it's just nice. I've just come to realize that as a true street tuner hobbyist, it is more about teaching people what they want, having a fantastic ability to diagnose different systems and in different ways, mm-hmm. and coming up with solutions to problems. And then also just having a profound understanding of different setups,
mm-hmm.
it makes a fantastic tuner. I haven't personally dealt with anyone else. And the only thing I've come to realize is that in this market, most tuners are people that are specific to a particular engine or car because that is what they've just become used to. And the knowledge for all of this is so vast that it's really hard to ask one person to know it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. And to even have the resources to do it all. Because unfortunately, just because you might have the knowledge, like I was saying earlier, some of these require you to have a specific dongle, like the ProUFI with the CAN bus dongle for USB. It was ridiculously expensive. It was like, what, $250 just so I can use my ProUFI with my computer?
Yeah.
Not to mention the
Now, is that why, and I know we should wrap up soon because you got a new son at home and you got to run home to him here soon. But is that why you think people, you get guys who go, you know, when if you're looking for a tuner in whatever town you're in, and obviously if you're in a bigger city, obviously you're going to have more options. But in a medium type of place like Colorado Springs, we're not huge, but we're not small. You get lots of guys who go, oh, I only tune Haltech. I only tune AEM, right? And part of you says, well, yeah, but an engine's an engine and you're doing the same thing with each of them. But do you think it's because of that, because of the license stuff, the software, all these hurdles, you know, you, like you can't expect one tuner.
Yeah, like HP tuners. If I'm not mistaken, with HP tuners, you have to get like a token for every single time you want to mess with something.
Wow. And that could be even just making a super tiny change, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just kind of crazy. And not to mention, like, with the way that the EPA is getting and all that, and, like, everyone saying, well, it's for off-road use only.
Let's be real. We're on the podcast. We're not on the radio show. Does anyone look at off-road use and put that part on their car and go, well, I guess I can't drive it on the street anymore? No. Not one person. Not one person.
Nope. And I think the nice thing with like where I'm at is it's just nice being able to teach people what they want and how mm-hmm. things really work, rather than having this constant like battle with people about hearsay and dumb things like, oh, the distributor is better. You make more power in the distributor than coil packs, or like, I heard you have to do this if you want to do that. And like just all this constant smoke and magic involved with something so trivial as running a motor.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with like the ECUs. And I really implore anybody that's trying to start like a small project with anything to start looking at the cheap options and understand what you're really expecting and just learn about what you're trying to do. Because, like they said with the mega squirts, the biggest problem and the reason those get such a bad rap is because no one truly understands the electronics portion of wiring a vehicle or just electronics in general. And so they're trying to buy something to build a motor that they don't even have knowledge in anyways. They're already learning about how to put a motor together. Now you're trying to learn how to wire something. You're not actually focused on it. And then when you wire it up and it goes up in smoke, you go, oh, it's a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. You're just not doing it right. You didn't know what you needed. You did not read the fine print.
Yeah. And now on that topic, MegaSquirt obviously being a more budget friendly ECU, but as it turns out, there are more budget friendly ECUs than MegaSquirt. And let's talk about real quick, does cheaper mean it's worse? Does more expensive mean it's better? I mean, I kind of know some of the answer here because I've got my AE86 running on a Speedduino. I mean, it's like a $200 ECU, and it's great. It's running full sequential four cylinder. It's running the ITBs. It gives me just enough room to mess things up on my own and learn about it. And then I call you in the night, Brian, help me.
And I think the great thing about that project was when we actually got to go out and see someone else with the same engine and a similar car chassis with the stock computer performing poorly.
Yep.
And yours was just night and day difference.
Yeah.
And the dude was so, so ecstatic about how well it ran. He was desperate to have one too.
Yep. I gave him a ride in my car, and compared to the stock ECU, which, I mean, bear in mind, stock ECU on his car, but not running all the stock stuff.
And that's the other thing too, is it doesn't, like I was saying earlier, it really doesn't matter which computer it is. It comes down to the way it's built. And if it's running, it is your weakest link.
Yeah.
And in that case, we had someone with a stock computer that did not have it running appropriately. And so it seemed so far worse that it was night and day for us. We could see that our build was running so amazing because we had taken the time to figure out all the problems. We made sure the fuel was right. We made sure the spark was working correctly. The advance was right. Then we got an E85. We got our AFR dialed in, and we had our cold start and our hot start kind of figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Acceleration enrichment, so it ran top notch.
Yeah, and then I blew some stuff up and changed things, and then you got mad. No, I'm kidding.
The better way to,
because I like tinkering with it sometimes, and then I get myself into trouble. But that's also one of the things that you can do with a standalone. And I kind of wanted to make the point too that with the hobbyist standalone stuff, it's really accessible if you are wanting to do it as a not just a hobbyist. You could actually, in theory, with the setup we have, I could go be competitive with a local autocross group on it, a road racing group. Like, I don't actually need more. Just because it's hobbyist doesn't mean that, oh, well, yeah, it's a hobbyist thing, but I actually want to go racing and do stuff. It doesn't mean that that's necessarily any more worse or, you know, different than an expensive ECU for that.
Truthfully, it's like, if you get everything set up, it's going to work as good as your motor is built to do.
Yeah.
In pretty much every situation. And now the thing with the funny thing about the Megasports is that it honestly kind of old news. And that's because that their price changed, their price point hasn't really changed, and there's been new products that have come out that are even cheaper, like we've been just talking about.
Speedtuino's one, but there's also Rustify makes a number of products too that you really like.
Yes, and the reason these are such interesting projects is because you have people with more passion, they're current, they're actively being worked on, which makes them far superior to other products because you're not waiting for a manufacturer to decide to make an update.
Yeah.
It's constantly being modified, updated by someone who has passion in it. And on top of that, a community.
Right. Yeah, it's a community. It's not just one developer working on it. If you have a problem or something, you can go on the forums, you can go on the GitHub and be like, hey, this is happening. And someone else will come in and, you know, be able to kind of see what's going on.
And it's a platform. It's so interesting to see the community because what you end up seeing is there are a couple boards of Speedtuino that are available to just buy and purchase and throw in your car so you don't have to do all the heavy lifting. But there are people out there, because it's an open source project, who go out of their way to build their own style PCB to accommodate their setup so they can have like a plug-and-play solution or a specific solution to their problem or just to be cheaper.
Yeah.
And then they post about it and they show their board and what it can do and how it operates and it all runs on the same code. It's just their own making. So now they're making their own ECUs from scratch and they cost next to nothing. I mean, the Speedtuino we put in your car, for example, pricing it all out only cost us about $300.
Yeah.
And now we have even cheaper options than that.
Like that was already two and a half years ago.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. There's already better stuff now.
And that was only for a sequential four cylinder. And because obviously these are constantly being built up on, we have other products that are even like fancier that are able to rival what other highly expensive ECUs can do, what factory ECUs can do. For example, like the constant problem with not having the ability to do drive-by wire has now been solved. We have these open source ECUs that come out now that can support drive-by wire out of the box, which is one of the reasons why I like the Rustify so much, because we have several options that are incredibly cheap. I can't find a cheaper solution to an ECU that supports drive-by wire out of the box than anything else. And it's so incredible. I mean, the first product I bought from them was the Proteus. And the Proteus, obviously just being a development board, you have to understand all this is just beta, but their development board could support dual drive-by wire and a product that only cost me at the time, I think about $500, $600.
Right.
Where if to do something like that with any other ECU, especially because it did sequential 12
and
cylinders.
By the way, development board, this was a fairly complete unit you got. It's not like you actually built this.
No, right? It's a complete board minus a case maybe.
Yeah.
But it had amp seal watertight connectors. It had a micro SD slot, USB built in type B, so you don't have to buy a ridiculously expensive, you know, cable, and it came with the connectors ready to be wired for whatever you're planning on throwing it in. In my case, I put it in the Subaru. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there obviously is going to be glitches. There's going to be a couple, you know, hiccups here and there, but realistically speaking, as it gets updated, it becomes less and less of a problem as people decide, like, figure new things out. Like, for example, the Easy 30 trigger pattern was only recently figured out in the last couple of years for that ECU. And it works flawlessly for me. And I mean, that car, you saw it. It start right up, drive.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely
on flex fuel. The flex fuel output works.
Yeah. And I mean, people also too, I mean, ignore the fact that even on a expensive commercial ECU, you're still oftentimes, some people still have problems. There's issues, there's glitches, there's problems that then they have to go through their manufacturer's tech support to try to sort out. Or maybe they don't, but maybe their tuner is doing that.
And I think just the most important part about all this is when you decide to do it this way, if you actually take the time, you learn more about your car, you learn more about this stuff, you're more equipped. And I cannot tell you how much I have learned from the wiring perspective, the tuning perspective, and the mechanical perspective of engines by just doing this. Mm-hmm. I mean, just recently we had a mechanical issue where a Nissan KA24, the distributor was physically jumping teeth on the intermediate gear for the timing chains. Something I've never seen before. and something that took us a couple days to quickly to try and figure out because we were losing 20 degrees of timing at a time, even with the computer we were using before that, which was an AEM. Mm-hmm. And I convinced my friend to do a RustCFI to get some better control, not because of the issue we were having, but because some other things came up. The fact that the AEM was so old, the software was for like Windows 98. And we updated it, and I recently got rolling for him, and he has been the happiest he's ever been with that car. It's at the fastest it's ever been, and it actually runs incredibly well. It always hits the AFR target that we expect. It's not running rich all the time. It fires right up. Stuff like that. It always hits boost really good. That's where, like, he was so nervous to do this at first because he thought, like, oh, this is some weird prototype board that, you know, isn't a complete product from some mystery company that he just mentioned that sounds like it's Russian.
Right, right.
And realistically, it turned out to be amazing. And that's kind of the trade-off when you have someone that's passionate, that understands what you're dealing with. I guess what I'm saying is if you want, you can get into this stuff, you can learn it. It takes time. Be open and don't just go for the most expensive thing because you think, you know, money is going to fix all your problems.
Well, and like we said earlier, a lot of times you have other issues aside from that that are being overlooked that are really maybe the cause of the problems, you know, when you look at that. But with that too, and with the ECUs, I mean, you know, not to scare people off, you know, and saying, oh, well, yeah, but it still is going to require all this work. For my 86 and the Speedduino, it's been, I've been street driving that car. I've been daily driving that car perfectly happily, right?
Oh, yeah. Same and with like, my Subaru.
It's not like a subpar experience that you're getting. Not only that, you know, there are now starting to be plug and play harnesses for some of these options too. Now for my AE86 with the 20 valve blacktop, there's no plug and play harness for that. We built a harness, but for a lot of stuff, a lot of like Miatas and things, you know, my Miatas, every time I've mentioned a Speedduino, nine out of 10 times when I've mentioned a Speedduino at like a car meet, if it's a Miata guy, some of them already know what that is, but anyone else, you always got to kind of explain it a little bit.
You actually directed someone with a Speedduino to me.
I did.
And
yes.
It's a funny story because when he had his, he was also having difficulties with a tuner, trying to tune it remotely because he couldn't do it himself.
And it was on a Miata too.
And it was on a Miata. It was supercharged. And then he decided that the supercharger was no longer great. He realized the mechanical problems with running it, being heat-wise. He did a turbo build. It was a very clean turbo build. And then he brought it back to me to tune again. And while tuning, we got really good, but we had one hiccup that we could not contribute to the ECU or the engine. We could not quite finesse what it was. And we finally decided that it had probably something to do with the RX-8 injectors that he was running. And so he took the leap to go ahead and try a new set of injectors. And he purchased them. He did it. We put them on the car. And sure enough, it cleaned up the hiccup we were having at a specific RPM. Turned out they were just not spraying effectively at this pulse width, at this speed. And another great example of just trying to diagnose things. And I remember one of the things he told me, he was really excited about it. He's like, I love the fact that not only did you just tune my Miata like to be, you know, somewhat fast, you tuned it to run properly in all scenarios. It accelerates nicely. It idles perfectly smooth. There's no like misfiring. It starts cold. It starts hot. Mm-hmm. All the above. And I feel like that is what so many people miss. And he was explaining to me how, like, you know, how you guys met through the S2Ks, how his S2K would make great power, but it was completely unusable because it was like it only ran good in boost and that was it.
Yeah.
And he's like, honestly, if I have the chance, I want you to retune my S2K. And unfortunately, he moved. But he was, even before he was moving, like, how can I hit you up remotely to do this stuff? Because you by far have exceeded my expectations.
Well, and I think that's because when you're doing it, I think, you know, a lot of stuff on the street. You're doing street tunes, as we call them, right? And so you are, I mean, inherently tuning for the street sometimes.
The conditions.
As people like to say, street ability, because a lot of people go, okay, turbo's on the car. All right, great. It's good. There's a base map that came with the ECU. Okay.
Base maps.
We'll put the base map on there and then we'll get it on the trailer and go straight to the dyno and then go do a couple of max power runs. Great. It's tuned at max power. They drive the car. They get it on the street.
Like, and terrible.
It sucks. Right. And coming at it from the perspective where you're doing it, starting on the street and then building up from there, you know, then being able to take it to a dyno somewhere afterwards and see, okay, what are we putting down? Is there any on the table that we're leaving? But the fact is, it's tuned for the street first, and then it's going on the dyno.
And I'll knock on table here, but I've never had a car blow up. Never had a car blow up because of a tune. Never had a car blow up because of something I did. In fact, I don't think we've ever had a car blow up in general just running one of my setups. And I don't mean to like
you should gloat. Knock on that fender at least like twice.
I don't mean to gloat like that, but what I'm trying to imply is I go through the steps to make sure the build is safe before anything else. And I think a lot of people need to do that more often. You got to think about your cooling system. You got to think about gas, you know, injectors being big enough. Is your spark going? Are you misfiring?
Again, are there any other mechanical issues you might have too? Because people are
missing things all the time. Yeah. And not everyone is a true profound mechanic. And sometimes you just really need that help. And it's honestly a hard thing to get these days because good mechanics are expensive and they're not common. And everyone says they can hold a wrench and do things. And the first thing they do is pull up YouTube.
Yeah.
And it's just not the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so I think, you know, that being a lesson and wrapping this up here on this bonus show, I think, you know, when you're looking to modify a car, think about these things first, at least. If there's anything you're taking away from this, think about these things first. Think about the mechanical condition of the car. Then think about what you are doing with the car currently and what you'd like to be doing. But I think don't get too far ahead either and say, well, yeah, well, someday I want it to be a competition GLTC race car or something, right?
I have a friend at work that said exactly what you're talking about. And it's like, yeah, you might have expectations for later, but just get it done now. You can always, here's the thing, you can always change it if you need to.
Yep.
You know, while I'm in there, I might as well do this. While I'm in there, I might as well do that. Just lose that mentality. Because if you just need to start with one goal. If you don't have that goal figured out, you're just going to be throwing money at shit.
Yep. Oop,
my bad.
Well, hey, we're not on the radio. It's okay.
I was doing so good.
So good. So good. Well, hey, you did good there. And I think we could talk about this more, and perhaps we will, and maybe we'll talk about too some other things. Next time we have you back on the show, there's always an open door for you to come on the show and talk about stuff, and we can carry on from there. But I think this is a great point. If you've got if you're listening to this and you've got maybe a similar experience with a tuner, or maybe you've made some mistakes doing something, or you've got a buddy who did, or maybe you had something that worked great. Right? Whatever it is, let me know on the Facebook page, facebook.com/automotiveADHD. Remember, you can also catch this on video too, YouTube and Rumble. I'm looking at the screen with the video right now. We've been talking about all these cheap ECUs and stuff, Brian. And do you see what this sticker is on my toolbox? It's like right in the frame.
Oh, yeah.
It says AEM, but don't look at that. So this whole time we've been saying, no, don't go AEM, don't go Haltech. Well, and I've got an AEM sticker on my toolbox.
I think it's funny because actually I do like some of the AEM products. And
this was from a wideband I got, actually. It was in the box with a wideband.
And you have to have a wideband.
Yeah.
And I just want to end, you know, saying that if you're really interested out there, I want you to go out there and compare these Speedwinos and these Russes, these open source projects like the Drop Bear, compare them to the Haltechs, compare them to the other units, and look that although they may not do everything exactly as the Haltechs or the Motechs or everything else does, but just look at how cheap it is and then look at what you actually need.
Right. Right. To that point, Motechs, for example.
You realize that, why am I buying this? Right. I'm not hating on Haltech or anything like that. They build amazing units and I've seen amazing cars built with them. I'm just saying from a hobbyist perspective, buy stuff within your price range so you're happier in the end of the day.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, those pricier ECUs, a lot of times...
Learn something.
Well, and a lot of times they're being used by guys on the professional course. Like literally professionals. Like actual professionals. Like this is literally their job to build a race car for a team or something like that racing.
Look at the way Motech prices their products and you'll quickly realize that is not for somebody that's just looking to make their Honda Civic fast.
Oh, yeah. See, any Civic guys. If you know a Civic guy, just throw a Speedwino at them, I think. Because, I mean, they're cheap enough anyway. You could literally throw it at them and It'd probably be better.
And it wouldn't hurt your pocket too bad.
It wouldn't hurt your pocket too bad. So, hey, there you go. Let's wrap that up. Thank you for joining us here on this bonus edition of the podcast. Remember, if you're just hearing this for the first time, maybe this is your first introduction to the show. This is also on the radio Saturdays at 9 a.m. on AM 1460 and FM 101.1 The Answer, AM 1400 KRLN and 91.7 KLZR. Catch it in Colorado. Give it a listen. Give the show a rating on Spotify. I'll see you on the radio show.